they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get
we found
ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
All right, and welcome down the security rabbit hole to the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Raf Yonder B. James.
Happy as always to be here, Raf.
I think I just went pirate there for a second. Happy.
I think you did.
Darby James, yar. Although my dog is now the appropriate pirate in the house with the one eye he has left now. All right, let's dive into this one. This will be fun. If you've ever felt like somebody has talked you into something, this episode is for you. We're going to talk with Mr. Robert Sell, and he's going to talk about his experience at DEF CON in the SE Village and all the good stuff. And for those of us, for those of you that are on the enterprise side playing defense on this stuff, grab a notepad, have a cup of coffee, take some notes as we welcome in Mr. Rob Sell. Hey, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me. So excited to be here.
And once again, technical challenges of firewalls get in the way of a easy recording.
Yeah, sorry about that. Trying to be super secure on my side.
That's all right. And, you know, firewalls get in the way of everything, don't they?
Sure does. Yes, right. Let's turn them all off.
Exactly. So, speaking of which.
You first.
Yeah, you first. Let's talk a little bit through your experience. So give us the kind of how you got there and how you got to the podium, and then we'll kind of do some lessons from there.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I only got third place a lot. You know, there's two people that did amazingly well there. But I did learn a ton from the experience, and it just kind of took off from there. I was really a newbie when I first got into it. But I've been to DEF CON twice. The first year I went there, I wandered around, and I was just blown away by the diverse, amount of stuff you could do there. And I wandered into the SE Village, and it was incredible. You have people in this plexiglass booth that are actually vishing real companies, and that whole concept of real actual live targets was just amazing to me. So I thought, I have to put my name into and try that out and see how I can do, even though I wasn't experienced in it. And so I did, and I thought, they say you should make a video as well, and so I did that because I knew I was up against some pretty tough competition there. There's some amazingly smart people that go to DEF CON, and so I made this video, and it was late at night. It was in my basement. It was dark. Everybody was sleeping, so I was trying to be quiet, and it turned into this really creepy little production. And I sent it in, thinking that it wasn't going to win, but I guess it was what they were looking for because it was extremely creepy and kind of in the spirit of the social manipulation.
Does it get any more cliche than the fact that you made the video in your basement?
Probably not. Well, I used my kid's Xbox lighting, and I stuck it under my head so that it would kind of light up my face, which added to the effect, I guess. And
did you have a hoodie on?
No, I think next year I'll wear the hoodie. So I'm already actually starting production on next year. And I've done little film edits all around my travels, so that should be interesting. But yeah, so I put it in, and they sent me an email a little while later. They said, "Hey, Rob, congratulations, you're in." And for about 15 seconds, you're really excited, and then you realize, "Holy crap, I'm going to be in Vegas with hundreds of my peers looking at me, and judging me as I try to perform." So I thought, I got to get to work. 100 hours, roughly. Within a 3-week time span, just doing OSINT. And this is a guy who didn't really know what he's doing. So I made a ton of mistakes. I did things very manual at the beginning. If you look at several hundreds of people on their LinkedIn, and then you realize that you're using your own personal account and they're all looking back at you, one of the many mistakes that I made. So it was an interesting journey and super,
yeah,
super fun.
Because at that point,
and
you're just creepy.
Yeah, I was extremely creepy.
Job.
Yeah, my creepiness level has just exponentially increased, and so friends and family now are telling me how creepy I am. So, You know, I don't know if that's a great thing or not, but it's been very educational.
Qualified to work in InfoSec.
Yeah, I guess so, right? So, yeah, but super fun, super fun. So I just, it really allowed me to discover how vulnerable we are as organizations and people to social engineering and really how much information is out there for OSINT enthusiasts.
All right, so tell us about the experience, man, because that sounds interesting. Like, you know, you did you know what you were going into and or kind of how it was going to be or because you had some time to gather your targets?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time on my target, and you know, and I didn't know what I was doing at first. And so, if there was somebody out there that knows what they're doing, I can't imagine what it would be like. But I felt at the end of the 3 weeks that I knew more about that company than some of the people that probably worked there. I knew who was in the cool groups. I knew who were the social butterflies. I knew, you know, when they came to work, who did their garbage, what parking was like, where they would eat, what was on the menu, what kind of access cards they had, what the entertainment was like, the culture, where people went to work after that, how many interns they had. You know, what locations they like to work at. You know, it was just amazing what you could just gather over that time frame. So, you know, it was scary that you could get so much. What models of computers they use, their Wi-Fi, SSID, just endless, right? So then, of course, you have to ask yourself, okay, so how secure now am I in my organization? So then you go back and you start looking at all of that. What's exposed?
Now, when you say you gathered all that information, you're saying this was before the actual competition?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what methods did you use? I'm sure people are sitting there wondering, like, how did you actually call them to get some of that, or was all that purely just doing searching online?
It's all online. So the OSINT part, there's no interaction. The only time I'm actually making any sort of contact is when I test the numbers that I'm going to call in Vegas. So round two is where you go to Vegas. You've got 20 minutes in the plexiglass booth to make calls. And so you want to go in there with numbers that are actually going to work. So you're allowed to call the number that you've discovered through OSINT to make sure it's still alive and that somebody picks up. But then when they pick up, you say, oh, sorry, wrong number, and you hang up. You're not allowed to engage. So it's really zero contact. You're strictly doing OSINT. At first, you're kind of you know, further back so that you're undetectable. You're just looking at things. You start off at simple stuff okay, let's go check your domain information, your DNS, and you're doing things like that that they're probably not going to be able to see. And then you might dig a little bit deeper and start looking at, you know, their PBX or things like that, right? The PBX is amazing. That's one of the things I talk about a lot with companies is, you know, we all have dial by name on our PBX. Most of us still have that. I don't know why. I don't think we need it anymore. But to somebody like me, oh, it's golden. I go through that. I get all your extensions, all your DIDs probably. And then I can call voicemail. That's just a treasure trove of information.
Well, I mean, look, the things like dial by name are for simplicity, right? I mean, you got to get a hold of Sue and payroll. You got to get a hold of Sue and payroll. It's just, you know, nobody else.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to go through all the hassle of calling an actual operator because people, ugh.
Yeah, I agree, but and some companies are going to be bigger targets than others. But the secretary or reception is really the social firewall, I think, in a lot of these cases, right? So as I was preparing to attack this company, that was really what I saw as the firewall. So I was developing strategies to get around the receptionist, and so fortunately there was DIDs that I could dial, so I could go direct to that person, which was great. But you know, I would argue a lot of companies, especially if they're high targets, a lot of people don't need DIDs. So unless you're in sales or you're externally facing, which a lot of us are not. So if you gave me an extension, you know, I'd probably be fine with that. And if it has to route through reception, you know, the calls that I'm getting, you know, a lot of them are sales and stuff like that. So it's going to depend on the culture of the company and the position people are in. But I think we give out too many DIDs, probably direct inward dials.
Yeah.
So people can dial you directly. And I think we might want to utilize reception a little bit more because there's not too many other defense mechanisms that you can do for somebody who's trying to dial in and social engineer you.
Well, I mean, so look, you, what was the objective? Like, what were you trying to accomplish besides get some secrets on people you probably didn't know they were telling you?
Yeah, so it's a CTF. So there's points for each flag that you collect, and so there's the same flags for both the OSINT portion and then the vishing portion. So in this exercise, my job was really to maximize my points and collect the most flags that I could. So on the OSINT part of it, I collected almost all the flags. I think there was two points that I didn't get. And then on the vishing, you have got strategies where you want to kind of collect as many as you can. And some people will ask questions that deliver the most points. And one of those would be, hey, can you go to this website? And you get a bunch of points if they do that. As opposed to, hey, how long have you worked there for? You don't get a lot of points for that because that's pretty easy to get. And so you have different strategies for, depending on what you want to do. Some people will say, have strategies where they say, hey, I'm going to visit your company. Can you answer these questions for me? Because I want to be prepared when I do my presentation. Because you only have 20 minutes, it's a much different type of attack than if you were, say, a real attacker. A classic one would be Mitnick, where he would call different people and just ask for small bits of information, which he would then layer for that final attack where he would get the information that he was actually really going for. Mine was 20 minutes. I'm probably going to have, you know, 2 to 3 people on the phone in that time frame. And I'll be going for what I call a full dump. So, and you can do a number of different things for that. I was really focusing on the engagement survey. So I would call you, for example, and say, hey, so-and-so, who's the VP of your HR department, recommended that I call you because you'd be a great person to talk to help us build this new employee survey to help with the engagement in your company. Do you have like 2 minutes to talk to me about this? And people feel good about that typically because I'm saying that you were recommended to us, and everybody usually cares about engagement. So I had pretty good success with that one, actually.
Now, when you look at the difference, you said most of the flags are the same between the OSINT part and the actual calling part.
Yeah,
they are assuming the same. Things like, you know, obviously, can I get you to click on a link? That's obviously not going to be part of the OSINT part. But how much of it, when you look at from a CTF perspective, is there that you couldn't get on the OSINT side that you had to actually get outside of a can I get you to actually perform an action that you had to wait and get while you were actually on the call?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There is, I think, at least one. I think there might be two flags that you can't get on the OSINT. So can you click this link was one of them. Yeah. I think that was the only one. I don't have the flag list in front of me. But, yeah, there wasn't very many. Most of it was the same.
So. Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is that, you know, it's always interesting for people to understand, you know, how much can be done. Like, you know, for almost all of what you're doing, you don't even need that phone piece
to get
all that information you're trying to get. You know, I think a lot of people still think, I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, knew who picked up their garbage. You knew these time cycles,
yeah,
you knew all these things,
research.
All without ever communicating with the company, right? And so to be able to gather that type of dossier without ever making that call, like I don't need that phone call for that type of stuff. I can do all that before I even start that call.
Absolutely. So a real attack, absolutely. You would probably be doing a lot more OSINT because you can pick up everything through that and be able to call with a very high level of authority and really sound like you know what you're talking about. By the time I was ready to call them, I felt so confident. I didn't feel there was any question they could ask me that I wouldn't have an answer for. So
does that change how organizations should go about defending against social engineering? I mean, we talk about there's all kinds of information on LinkedIn, there's all kinds of this, and then when we get people on the phone, it's, hey, you shouldn't give out this, you shouldn't give out that. But, I mean, it sounds like most of that I can get anyway, right? You know, like, is it bad that I'm saying what my extension is on the phone? You know, that type of stuff, or does it...
Yeah, that's an awesome question, because I think that companies are looking at this quite often the wrong way. So you have people that are freaking out and just say, okay, you know, you can't do any Twitter, you can't do any, you know, social media about the company.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to lose that battle, A, And B, that's, you know, you're going to decrease the value of your brand by doing that. We have a lot of amazing people that work for our different companies, right? And when they tweet out and say, hey, you know, we just had a corporate lunch, it was fantastic, or we just released this product, it's great. You know, that has value. And I think that we should be promoting that. But at this, because we're not going to win that battle anyway, but we should also be guiding the people a little bit, right? So when I look at OSINTing a company and I look at collecting the information, there's a lot of stuff out there that's not bad, right? They're talking about how great their product is, stuff like that. That's all legitimate. When they show the VPN details, that's probably not a good idea. And so I think just with a little bit of guidance with our employees saying, okay, we want you to go out and promote us. That's great. We'll even maybe gamify it and actually give you rewards for doing that. But let's do it with these guidelines, right? Which are fairly simple. You know, don't put our VPN information out there, things like that. Now I would have a, you know, maybe not a policy, but because I think nobody reads policy. We have to have them, but people don't read them. But I would somehow wrap something fun around it and make it part of the corporate culture.
But does it also lead to making sure that you have a better understanding of the type of information within your organization, the type of stuff that gets passed out of the organization?
Yeah.
And then here's the stuff that could be dangerous to us. How do we defend against that? I mean, if you want to use like who picks up the recycling, well, what's the attack vector for recycling? Right. You know, so we're going to dress up like the recycling guy and come in, you know,
yeah.
What's the attack vector for
the
that?
Answer is how yes. Do we,
right. May do that, right? I mean, I have a FedEx uniform that I use. Yep. You know, they may do that, but what's that attack vector and understanding, okay, what's our controls in place to help mitigate if somebody comes in that's not the normal pickup?
Yeah.
How do we do that? You know, I think so many places they just try to, like you said, they put this policy out there, say you can do this, you can't do this, don't use this information, but nobody understands why or what that risk is.
Yeah.
For that specific information, you know, we still got HR throwing out job descriptions that list every piece of technology we use internally.
Yeah, those are great.
You know, we have to do that. So better to understand, okay, what is this information we're doing? How could that hurt us? Now, how do we go ahead and protect that aspect of it versus how do exactly. we stop so much of this coming out? Because we use C# internally. Who cares? You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You have a great point there. I think that we often just tell people, okay, don't do that. But we don't go into the better part of the educational component there where we say, okay, well, this is why. And we actually have people care. And I find people don't have a lot of time. And, you know, even if we say why, maybe they won't care unless we make it worth their time, right? And so I really advocate making it part of the corporate culture. And how do you do that? I would say you want to, you know, have ongoing programs where you maybe do a vishing program for 3 months, you gamify it and you make it actually fun and you make you create champions out of that. And then you can tell a deeper story there, right? You can say, so-and-so caught this person trying to draft in behind them, physical access to the building. You know, this is what they did. That was the right thing to do. This is why that is so important. And you give them a Starbucks card, take their picture, and you put it on their on your portal. That's the sort of thing I think is going to make a difference. But because otherwise, people won't care. They're not rewarded for that particular behavior.
Well, I think there's a lot of places that people don't know either. You know, I'm thinking about this as we're talking through it. You know, the FedEx example, right? Or a UPS mm-hmm. guy. You dress up, you get in. You know, I mean, is there a corporate policy that, you know, nobody gets past that reception desk? I don't care what that guy's delivering. You know, it'll be an internal mail person that delivers it internally. If you see a UPS guy in an, you know, a secured area, that's immediately a red flag. And I can tell you, I mean, I've been in areas where you're in a secure area dressed in a FedEx uniform and people just, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
You know, and they may not realize that, hey, the FedEx guy won't ever come back here. You know, trying to think through all the different types of scenarios that people might need to think about, you know, can be overwhelming at times as well.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. But I think having some basic rules, and I think when we look at key positions like our receptionists, right, those people don't get a lot of training, awareness training, right? And I think we need to invest a little bit more in those positions because when we talk about a FedEx person, those are the people that are interacting with that outside entity and either allowing them to come deeper in our organization physically or not, and the phone calls as well, right? So you know, a lot of us have really good receptionists because those people are used to dealing with that. But I think we could invest in them more.
Well, so, but I mean, essentially, you guys, what we're doing is we're fighting human nature. I mean, James, the FedEx guy, you know, up in the CEO's office, somebody might go, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And he's like, "Oh, I had to hand deliver this because this is a very important package and I couldn't let anybody else handle it. It's very highly sensitive. Like, by the way, can you hold the door open for me while I go there?" Okay. I mean, we're human. We're programmed to be helpful. We're programmed. If I tell you, "Hey, Mike's number is still blah 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 blah," right? And they'll go, "No. That must be old. His number is like it's instinctive. It's wired in us. We're not built to be suspicious of each other." And frankly, I think that's a good thing because we've got.
I would say, who wants to be that jerk that walks to the door, like they scan their pass, they open the door, and immediately
shut
and
it,
slam
and
it behind
right.
them, and they're like, "No, exactly. Sorry, can't come." Nobody wants to be that person,
right?
I totally agree. I don't think we need to be that person. I don't think we need to be rude or unhelpful to people, and it doesn't help anything to do that. I think that let's say you did have somebody who wants to draft in behind you. And you don't recognize them, you don't see the card or anything like that, you could stop and say, "Hey, do you have an appointment here? Let me help you go through reception to make sure you get you get to where you want to go." So you don't need to slam the door in anybody's face. And I think a good physical pen tester is going to, you know, dress up so they look like they're pregnant or they're carrying a big box of donuts or pizzas or something. So you're definitely not going to want to slam the door in those people's faces.
Well, it's I don't know. Robert, as we're talking through kind of how the social engineering trade and craft operates, I just keep thinking about the fact that we're fighting, you know, you're utilizing the good in people to do evil. All right.
Yeah. You're manipulation.
You're leveraging somebody's desire to be helpful, to be nice, to be cordial, to, you know, help somebody that looks like they need help and all that stuff. I mean, teaching them the right amount of suspicion, I think, is the trick. I mean, because you otherwise this is just kind of going to go around and around. It's like, you know, we went back, tell people not to click anything. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. Hey, by the way, you know, your security advisory from Microsoft comes with a link. Don't click anything.
Yeah.
Give me some advice that's going to work from your opinion, because you're from the attacking side, that would work to stop you, or at least slow you down enough to where somebody discovers what you're doing in a reasonable amount of time without trying to break fundamentally break the way humans are wired.
Yeah, absolutely. I always use the bear approach, right? So if you're out in the woods with your friend and, you stumble across a hungry bear and it starts chasing you, you don't really need to think about the bear. You need to think about your friend, right? So as long as you can run faster than your friend, you're probably going to be good. So the same thing with security, right? We don't have to be necessarily awesome. We just have to be a little better than everybody else. And
all I've been visiting right now is being like, "Look, I just need to make sure that I'm in front of my buddy when I walk through the door."
Yeah.
So it's him that didn't let the guy in.
You put the bricks in his pack sack.
Well, so I'm Robert, kind of with you, but we've had this discussion on Twitter a couple times with some of the folks I actually enjoy conversing with, and I get it. I'm with you, because I've used that analogy before too. Except that there isn't a bear; there's virtually an infinite number of bears.
Yeah,
and so outrunning. Right. So I don't know that analogy necessarily. I get what you're saying. I just don't know if that analogy necessarily holds. So, but there's a minimum bar to clear, right? There's something that, like, what are the strategies that when you did this that would have made you go, "Ooh, crap, I have to rethink." Yeah. Like, what would have made you stop for a second, or at least I don't know, slowed you down? Like, what would have worked?
Sure, absolutely. So I'll do the OSINT side first. I think the vishing side is more interesting to some degree on the defense. But on the on the OSINT side, you know, there's a handful of people in an organization that I call the social butterflies, and they're the ones that are posting most of the information. So if you can determine who those people are and then, you know, advise them not to put the VPN information on their Twitter account, you're going to reduce your footprint quite a bit. But even more simple than that, how you're actually registering certain things like your domain and other stuff like that, taking a look at that, right? Is your phone number in there? Is the email in there? I'll get the phone number format, like the prefix and stuff from that. Then I'll be able to figure out the blocks of the suffixes on those. So just some simple stuff like that when you're at an IT level. And then doing the user education as far as what they're posting.
So before you switch over to that, sorry.
Yeah.
Before you move on to the phishing side, so when you talk about like the domain registrations, because I've had people go both ways of, you know, should you do like private registrations where you can't see any of the information? I've had other people argue that say you shouldn't do private because if there's a problem with your domain, mm-hmm. they have a way to, like, they have a number to contact you. Do you recommend one way or the other? I mean, are private registrations recommended for that type of stuff?
So I'll let you decide. However, here's a simple test for that. So if you go register a domain and you put your own personal phone number and email address in there, then wait 5 minutes. And you'll start to get calls and emails right away from people that want to sell you stuff, like website design or whatever else it
right.
is. It just pours in, right? So to me, the answer is pretty simple. I will make it private. It's going to cost you $30 a year or whatever it is, but I'll make it private. And then, you know, if I have a problem with my domain, usually the domain, whoever I'm registering my domain with, is going to let me know. And I'm going to monitor that if, you know, especially, you know, for if it's up or down or if it's going to expire,
right.
things like that, right? So I'm not really worried about that too much. I've got a
okay.
bunch of domains, and I'll make them private just because of that. Because it takes literally 5 minutes, and they're on you. So
right.
Yeah. To me, the answer is pretty clear. Okay. But there may be other reasons why people wouldn't want to do that, but I'm just not aware of them.
I do mine private too. I just figured I'd ask out there while we had the opportunity.
Yeah, it was just incredible actually, because I hadn't registered a domain in some time, and then I did, and it's like, wow, this took them 5 minutes and they were after me. So after that, I privatized it all. But and then on the phishing side, you know, what I see is if I can get to someone directly with a DID, direct inward dial, if you've got a lot of those in your organization, those are the people I'm going to target. I'm going to go after the people, you know, with the high charisma, low wisdom scores, because I want them to talk to me, but I don't want them to have good judgment around, are these appropriate questions to answer? Nor do I want them to have a lot of friends that they can ask for help from. So interns are great because they're going to come and go out of your organization. They're not fully in, you know, necessarily super invested because they know that they're going to have an expiry date. New people as well, I think, are great. So on LinkedIn, I look at how many connections they have. And if they've got a lot, they're probably not going to be good targets. If they have less, they're probably going to be good. So I guess one of the things you could look at for defense is how easy it is for me to get to them. So I know we don't want to necessarily route through reception all the time, but that will reduce the contact point quite a bit. So that's one of the big things. The more I can learn about a person as well, that's a big deal. Sometimes I'll say, you know, stop answering the phone. I think a lot of us pick up the phone whenever it rings. You know, mine, I'll go to voicemail, and then it'll go to my email, and then I'll listen to it, and then I'll call you back. Because a lot of mine are sales, so that works for me. I think also educating people on the threats of phishing, right? So it's going to get better and better and better. It's already pretty amazing when we look at some of the really good phishing attacks, but it's growing exponentially because it's been monetized. And so, you know, if you're making money off of something, you're going to keep, you know, investing some of those profits, right, and make it better and better. So I would, and also your targets are going to be the people that can give out that money. So your executive. So I would take a look at how are we protecting our executive. One of the things that I think is worthwhile looking at is just vishing your executive, practicing on them a little bit, you know, approach that with care, you know, because they also have the authority to change your career profile. So, but I think to educate them. They don't have a lot of time. If you could do live fishing tests with them, I think that would be pretty phenomenal. If anybody's doing that, let me know. I'd be pretty interested in that.
Well, I would think for them it would be pretty targeted, right, as the type of visit you would go for. I mean, you're not going to call up and just randomly try to get them to go to a link where you'd try to do that more with a customer support type of thing. You know, with the executives, I mean, you've probably got different targets there that you're going at. So you'd want to have them more targeted to, hey, here's the type of risks that are really coming to you. I mean, are they going to fall as much for the, you know, Microsoft tech support scam as somebody else, you know, lower down the chain? Probably not, just by how they probably have their work computers worked on. Somebody else probably does that. So that's their problem. So, you know, thinking about what you want to focus on with each type of user is probably pretty critical.
Yeah, totally. And this is really more like spear phishing, right? It's you're going to know your target. It's an executive. You're going to have to put the time in to prepare for that. So when you call them up, you're going for that big reward, right? You're going for the million plus dollars. So it might be an attack like, hey, Joe, I just got a call from customer X. We need to wire transfer, you know, $2 million to this account. You know, it's Friday night. I know you're busy, but we got to get this done right now. That sort of thing, right? So you're going for the big reward.
Well, I mean, yeah, that is I wonder how often that works. So we've seen the digital, the written version of that. Oh, you just identified the urgent. You combine urgency with a sense of pushing somebody, an appeal to authority, a sense of urgency, and you mix the right ingredients in there. And I think we talked about this with somebody else a while back, and I got one of those emails where it said, hey, we are with some federal tax agency. I was like, ha, 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 that looks real. Sure, I'll keep reading. This is funny. But like the rest of the email, if I hadn't, been level-headed about it, seems fairly threatening. It seems like they know enough information about me, and it's like, oh, wait a second. Like, I actually, even though I knew it was fake, I mean, I knew it was fake, because there is no federal tax agency and there's no such thing, right? And but in the back of my mind, I get that, but what is this real? Like, should I not delete it? Like, what can I? And that it just creeps into your brain, and that's how that's how this stuff wins. It's I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny. It's gonna get better and better.
It's funny you mentioned that, Raf. And it was a couple months ago, maybe almost a year ago. My sister called me asking me about PayPal security. Like, how good is PayPal? I'm like, it's PayPal. I'm pretty sure it's pretty good. And so it ended up basically she had put something up for sale. Somebody said they were going to buy it. And they were actually using a combination of SMS and email, right? So some guy was texting with her saying, hey, I'm going to buy it. Had some, his attorney sending out a thing. And, it was the classic, well, here, we put $20,000 into your account, but I know you only asked for $15,000, but the other $5,000 for shipping and handling. So you need to give me that back. But I gave you enough to cover it, but PayPal can't release it until – you do, like this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. And she, that's a classic.
Yeah, she reaches out to me, and I'm like, that is completely a scam. There's no way. I said, go log into your PayPal account. Don't click links. I said, go to your PayPal account, log in. Do you see anything? I said, call PayPal from their site. And she called me like, yep, completely a scam. But this guy, like she wrote, like texted him back and said, hey, I talked to PayPal. They said this is a scam, not to do this. And I think later that night, they emailed her again, and they used that. They said, hey, we apologize for the inconvenience that you called us. And, we couldn't tell you that we saw it because of scams that happened just like – I mean, I was blown away by the way that they took the fact that she said she called and then used that as part of their ruse to basically say, oh, no, yeah, you called – yeah, but, we don't see that in our systems because so we protect you from scams. You'd still need to do this. And then they – like you were saying, like the threatening, they had everything in there about the FBI and the NSA are monitoring these transactions to make sure they're real. Nice. And, of course, I'm like, well, of course they are, but not the way they're saying they are.
Yeah.
And then she just ignored it. And the next day they were like, you have 24 hours before we're going to, put out whatever. Yeah. And they show all I'm these sensitive. Pictures at the bottom of the email that have these guys, like terrorists being arrested. Wow. And my sister's like, I mean, is this real? I said, it is not real. Just ignore it. But, you know, it's amazing when you use all a combination of these different tactics.
Exactly.
That people fall for it. And Raph, last time we talked about social engineering, I feel like it was starting to become more of a trend. And I don't know if you're seeing this, Robert or not, but the fact that people are combining like the phishing and the phishing together and like, hey, I'm going to send you an email. Then I'm going to call you right after. Hey, I just sent an email.
Yeah, they're getting more sophisticated. I mean, look, we're training people and educating them on, you know, ways they're going to be attacked. So, the good guys up their game, the bad guys have to up their game. I mean, it makes sense to me. And I that's the thing that I keep coming back to is this. I get it. It's an arms race. It's an arms race at every level all the time. But how do we keep it from being an arms race that we're always a step behind on, when clearly human nature is not on our side of the defenders here? That's the part I want to walk away with, having some sort of, I don't know.
That's a good point, right? I mean, we all want to be helpful to each other. And when these people call us, they use those different principles. And there's a great book by Robert, I'm going to butcher his last name, Cialdini. He talks about the six principles of influence. And he boils it down to six, right? Social proof, consistency, authority, likability, and all these things. And the attackers now are not only combining attack vectors, but combining those principles, because they know that's going to make us want to respond in the way that they want. And you know, our human nature is to do so, and we don't want to lose that you know, positive human nature that makes us who we are. You know, that makes a successful society. But I think at the same time, we can also, just like they're setting us up, we can set them up to some degree and detect the patterns of behavior that they're doing, right? So I love it when they call me, actually. You know, when I'm at home, when I'm at work, I don't answer the phone. But when I'm at home, I'm watching a movie or something, they call me up. And, you know, we know a lot of those patterns, right? We know that they're going to start off with, you know, a time sensitivity trick, or a, you know, congratulations, you've won this cruise trick, or those things, right? I mean, they're getting more sophisticated, but we can generally spot some of those. I mean, I think the pictures of the terrorists at the bottom in handcuffs is a nice touch. But, you know,
it was impressive. You know, it was impressive. I mean, I won't lie to you. Like, looking at the email, I mean, it had PayPal, like, logo. It had signature from the president. Yeah. I mean, it was laid out to the point. If you didn't know, you would seriously be terrified.
Yeah. So I think we can develop patterns that we can then just automatically do. So when they call me, I get really entertained. And the first thing I say is, I say, hey, you know, this connection's not very good. Can you give me your personal phone number? Because I want to call you back. I'm really interested in this. And, you know, of course, they don't want to do that. So the second they don't want to do that, okay, you can just hang up, right? Because then you know, okay, this is a scam. But then there's a whole bunch of other things that you can do like that, right? Which worked pretty good. So just the other night, I was having fun with somebody doing that. But we can build those in, and then we can train our people what to do there. You know, just simply saying, I got to call you back later. I think that's a perfectly legitimate first line of defense.
Is there ways to detect, like, if somebody's calling from spoofed numbers or anything like that, to be able to block that? I mean, kind of like what we do with the email.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a spoofed email address. We can junk it.
Yeah. So a couple of things you can do there. The spoofed numbers, fortunately, they're not really good at that right now. Real attackers are terrible at that. I think they're going to improve. But all the time, my cell phone will ring, and it'll be, you know, 888, right? And I look at that, and I know right away what it's all about. That will get better. You know, I think on the email side, what you can do is put the, you know, extension or external, rather, or EXT in the subject line from all external incoming mail. That way, if your president gets in, or your CFO gets an email from your president saying, hey, transfer $1 million over to this account by email, but it's from a spoofed external email, it'll say EXT or external in the subject line, and that should helpfully tip them off a little bit, right? Or her off. So things like that we can do on the email side.
We did. We set up Mac Mail used to have the capability. I don't know if it still does, but it had the ability to change the color when you were creating an email if it was going outside your domain.
Nice. I like that. Because that's
so that
very
way, you know, if you hit reply or something, it would change the color. I'm pretty sure on the to address, you know, let you know, like, hey, this isn't going to yourdomain.com. It's going to some other address. It was pretty neat. Yeah. I'll have to look and see if that's set. It's been years since I used that, but we had that set up. So when you sent out, you knew if you were sending it out outside the company. Mm-hmm. So at least you could double check it to make sure the file you had attached was the right file.
Yeah, that's great. I like the color thing. That's even better than the subject line because that's easier to see. No,
well,
that's
you're
great.
Seeing too, some of the cell phone companies now are offering, you know, you get a phone call and it'll say like, what's it? Does it say spam or something like that? Some of them, I forget, like T-Mobile does it. Yeah. And because I have people tell they're like scam alert or something like that as the caller ID. So I got to assume that technology will start getting better as well as we start reporting these things and look. I know whenever I get a phone call, the first thing I do is look up that number in Google to see, like, what do people are reporting this
well,
number
so
as?
I've got a on my cell phone, on my Android, I've got an app called Truecaller, and it actually does a reverse lookup on phone numbers. And it actually has, not to advertise for them because it's kind of clunky and it has some issues, but if you've got internet connectivity while somebody's calling you, what it'll do is it'll tell you, hey, 1,000 people around you reported this as spam. And you can go, yep, ignore that, right? So it's the power of the crowd. And I think that's kind of where the brilliance is in a lot of these where, you know, if we could get that as like that kind of functionality into the base of every cell phone, then, you know, when somebody's calling you, like, for example, I remember being taught if it's a blocked number, don't answer it. Except for now, some of the call centers come through as, you know, private or blocked numbers. Like, well, I'm sorry, I don't pick up blocked phone numbers. Like, well, can't call you any other way. I'm like, well, that's too bad. But but the government does that a lot, which is kind of weird. But that's what we were taught before, right, is that don't pick up private or blocked numbers. You know, offer to call them back and hit *69, right, to figure out where they came from, blah, blah, blah. Some of that stuff they've gotten around. Caller ID spoofing is practically simple now, and with VoIP calling and all that. So, like I said, you know, we up the game, they up the game. So, all right. Yeah. Let me ask, because I don't want to interrupt you, but like, since we need to start kind of thinking about wrapping this show up, because this has been a fun conversation. What do you? I'll go back to what do you want to leave our listeners with? Because they're probably on the enterprise side listening and going, "Cool." I have no chance. But how do we help them protect?
There's always hope.
Well, there's always hope, as Haroon mentioned previously. But how do we help them cope, and how do we help them defend against baddies like you?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff, and I'm happy to talk to people, on Twitter or whatever else to get into more detail on any of these particulars. But just some things that come immediately to mind is that, you know, we haven't invested historically in defense of social engineering. And I think it's really at this point in time, we took it a little more seriously, because hacking into someone's firewall, you know, it that's a lot of work typically, right? But, you know, social engineering, I can just call somebody in your company and ask for their password and they will give it to me. So that's what I'm going to do. And that's monetized now. People are making millions of dollars. It's going to get better and better. So I think we need to put some of our InfoSec budget towards that. And what would that be? Probably programs, phishing programs, maybe some training for those people that didn't get it before, like our receptionists, right? I really think that that's a key area. So I would do a lot of that. Or more of that than we historically have. I would do user training. I would gamify it, make it fun, make them actually care, because typically they don't. And then I would also prepare for the breach, right? So prepare for that day when someone comes to you and says, yeah, I just wire transferred $1 million and I don't think it went to where I thought it would go. Well, you know, think about what would you do if someone came to your door and said that. Who is responsible, right? Does your insurance cover that? My bet is no. So if you give away money, typically I don't think it's covered. There's some great articles on the internet. I can send you links for that that talk about it. And then
that's
how do you protect? Yeah, how do you
protect? The insurance
protect?
Angle.
Yeah, totally, totally. There's a lot of stuff you could go down with that, talk about with that. But then also, you know, if all the defenses don't work and they're inside and they're talking to somebody, how do you prevent somebody from doing something wrong when they're trying to help that social engineer, right? They're being manipulated. So separation of duties maybe, right? Make it so that you cannot transfer $1 million without multiple people turning the keys, right? Things like that. I think that You know, there's some basic InfoSec principles like separation of duties that we can apply to the defense of social engineering attacks that we haven't necessarily done yet. And those are sometimes in the business, right? So when we're talking to finance, you know, we have to learn their processes. How do you transfer money, right? How do you give away our money and stuff? And how do we protect against that as one example?
Hmm. Well, that's hugely helpful.
Good.
Well, good. This has been fun. James, any parting thoughts?
No, I think we covered quite a bit. I think it just changes how, you know, people need to. We talk about asset inventory. We talk about all the other parts of security. But, you know, when we look at the data that we have, the things that we do, the processes we do, is understanding how we need to protect those like what processes actually need to be protected.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Great point. Great point.
Excellent. Well, this is fun.
Yeah. Before you guys go, can I just get your mother's maiden name?
Yeah. It is Tuba.
Okay. Great. 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 Thanks. And, I'll stop there.
Oh, that's a riot. All right. And by the way, guys, in case you're wondering, that was my answer was from something that we talked about earlier, James, and before we hit the record button. And that's some of us start to make up some pretty elaborate things for our for all the secret questions that you have to answer per website. And we're just commenting on how if we ever lose our password managers, we're kind of hosed. But because none of us remembered the answers to our secret questions because they're all made up. And I'm pretty sure I used Tuba at some point. I've used Moon Unit. I've used, you know, like... Your nice. Favorite fruit. Your favorite fruit, jalopy. It's there's nothing. There's nothing quite like getting on the phone with somebody to have to password reset your stuff. And like, but wait, do a quick identification with you. Can you go ahead and give me your mother's maiden name? Sure, Turtle Wax. They're like, what?
What nationality is that?
Yes, that is the from the Greek Isles of Turtle.
Yeah. It's funny you asked the maiden name thing. Before I got married, my wife's friends, they wanted to do a video. So that way at the bachelor party or whatever they were doing, they could show the video and they would show them asking me questions. And then before they showed my answer, they would have her answer the question. And one of the questions, they're like, what's your mother's maiden name? And I was like, I'm not telling you that. And they got – I mean, they got really mad because I wouldn't answer them. And so they ended up – I mean, we kept going, but they were ticked. They show the video to my soon-to-be wife, and they get to the "What's your mother's maiden name?" And she looks, and she's like, "He won't tell you that." And sure enough, I mean, that was the end. She knew. Like, I'm not gonna tell you that. What's wrong with you?
Yeah,
it's really funny.
Yeah, that's great.
Well,
many people
folks,
do though.
Yes, they do. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been fun. Hey, Rob, thanks for joining us. It was thanks for sharing the experience.
Thank you.
It was cool. So,
yeah, it's great to be here.
For the Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast crew and this fun guest, Mr. Rob Stell, I hope you guys learned something, took some notes, and maybe you go check your insurance policies, huh? And on that note, this is Raph, and I will sign us off and tell you we'll see you on another time, another place, on another Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. See you guys later. Ciao, y'all.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Our website is whiterabbit.net, whiterabbit.net. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.